Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
We have a 911. Armed robbery in progress. See surplus store, corner People's Drive, North 24th Street.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Cop Shop. I'm Chief Steve Heavy, and with me, as always, is our Public Information Officer, Shanice. How are you?
I'm good, Chief. How are you?
Good. We've had a busy couple of weeks. Scott's completely distracting me within the first 15 seconds of the show.
Sorry.
It might just indicate the show. Are we good to go?
Yes.
All right. We've had a busy couple of weeks, a lot of different events that we've been supporting. September and into October is a very busy time of year, but we had our National Night Out just a couple of weeks ago, and that I thought was more vendors than we've ever had, and a good turnout, very nice day, so the weather was great. So National Night Out is one of my favorites. You know, I like seeing all the kids. I like them getting a chance to grab pumpkins, and sometimes we've done stuff like dunk tanks and stuff. This year it was a basketball, me and Chief Starrett from Fire. So it was, overall, it was a great event. It was great to see all the vendors out there. Scott, you and San Juan College carried it live.
We were there, yes, sir. We're showing some of the footage, Chief, right there.
Look at you with the drone.
Look at that, right?
Wow. It was a huge turnout.
Yeah.
I was actually having to cut vendors out because they were trying to register too late once everything was already done.
Huh.
But I think we ended up with close to 50.
Yeah, that. I actually like
what you said on our interview, so yeah. I'm sure that was accurate.
Yes. Well,
yes.
How could I be off?
No, you were right. I think, yeah, but... that was the pictures from our drone. We thank Zia Drone Operations for being there with us and helping us with our footage. But we were glad to be out there to kind of show everybody what was going on and maybe get a few more folks out there.
No, it's actually beautiful when you're looking at it on the drone.
Leaves are changing.
Yeah, leaves starting to change, but the river's still flowing. Lots of vendors. So overall, it was a great success. So that was one of a bunch of events that we have been supporting over the last couple of weeks. The Shiprock Parade was last week, Saturday. We had officers out there. We had the Road Apple Rally that we were supporting. We had Chili Fest. Were you one of the judges at Chili Fest this year?
I was not.
You were not?
I was not, Chief. No.
You have been?
I have not.
Oh.
I always have a conflict with the Chili Fest.
No, I was not.
I am at the Aztec Highland Games.
Oh, the Aztec Highland
Games.
Where
I get to wear my kilt.
Yes.
And you've never seen
that
either.
You got pictures of that?
I have seen the kilt pictures.
Oh, I have not. We need them for the show.
Yes, we'll put them on our Facebook page.
Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, right. So I can never come to the Chili Fest because I'm already committed over in Aztec.
So I actually was a judge there, and I'm not really a connoisseur of chili, so that was a little unusual.
How many years?
Like ketchup.
Yeah.
Both sides.
I liked it better when you used to be, you know.
Quieter?
Yeah, a lot quieter. Wow. So, yeah, the show's growing and not necessarily the way we want. But we also had the countywide emergency response drill, which was up here at the college.
That's right.
You didn't participate in that, did you?
No, I did not.
But Shanice was up here.
Yeah.
And
we
had a bunch of officers and from around the county, as well as emergency management people here, and we used our real-time crime center in the course of it. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you saw and what you thought of it?
So. It was actually pretty spectacular being an observer for all of it because I was kind of got to be in the action. I was taking pictures, so I was behind the officers. And I thought it was going to be more so like they were kind of on their own and then they were going to be debriefed after and it was going to, we were going to figure out then, you know, what went wrong, what we could have done differently. But there were actually observers with the officers that were following them around. So if the officers had missed something, it got pointed out. So the officers were clearing these rooms and they were checking the doors and the doors were locked. And one of the observers is like, the doors are locked, but you guys have key card access. So then the light bulb went off and then they started like being able to access the doors, so they were still clearing the rooms even though they were locked, but it was something that would have gotten missed and brought up after the fact if
good
if it wasn't mentioned then.
So some of that is lessons that we've been learning through the years, you know, back at the time of the Aztec shooting, which is honestly not that many years ago. The schools would go into lockdown and officers didn't have access to the different schools. So in that one, responding officers actually shot out the windows in order to make access to the schools. FPD had already had a greater liaison on that topic of access for officers, but we made sure that all our officers had access to all the different schools around the city, and that the Aztec experience was definitely a reminder of why we needed that. So some of these things that we're doing now, we have access to the cameras in the different schools, and we can tap in live with the real-time crime center, and we can direct officers to where we see the suspect and what hallways they're going to go down, right, left, and vector them as fast as possible towards the suspect. So these drills are invaluable for ensuring that our response is the best that we can give. And of course, on May 15th, we had a chance to see, you know, you've got to be training, you've got to be working on these things, because you never know when something really bad is going to happen. So you were there most of the day during the test?
Mm-hmm, yep.
And it was your first time seeing it?
It was.
Good.
So, and there we had two different active shooters in two different buildings, and then there was a bomb discovered, so it activated our bomb squad. And just like the teamwork of all of it, they had the injured had like blood splatter, and then it was having to figure out what was going wrong, so they were actually using equipment like it was a full live drill for them.
Well, that's excellent. You know, I think the recent events that we saw late last week in Israel show you've got to be training for those kind of things, and it has to be multi-agency and multi-jurisdictional. So, you know, not just police, but you've got to have police coming in with fire and with the medics behind them and begin treating and evacuating as fast as possible injured. We saw that a little bit May 15th. Of course, what they're experiencing in Israel right now is just horrific, and they were trying to do the same thing with their military and their police responding and then bringing in medics behind. So that's something that, you know, really Mike Mestis is our emergency operations manager for the county, and he does an excellent job kind of bringing all the entities together. And I'm always in favor of us training up here on the college. It's a huge place, very spread out. Lots of folks come in. It's one of the central jewels of Farmington. But then we better make sure that we know what we're doing if there's an incident up here. And so, you know, I really applaud emergency management and all the agencies that took part in that. As far as the Real-Time Crime Center, we had a post a couple of weeks back now on how you could register your cameras with us. And by that, what we mean is when we have an incident at 3 o'clock in the morning, we don't know who has cameras in the area. But lots of homes have Ring doorbell cameras and things like that. And when our detectives respond, they'll obviously process the scene, but then they start canvassing the neighborhood to try and figure out who has cameras. Much easier for us, much faster response for us. If we know that you have a camera and that you're willing to share your footage with us in the event of something major happening. So this is kind of a cooperation between the police and the community. When we have major incidents, we need your help, no doubt about it. We could use you letting us know, hey, I've got footage, I'm willing to share that with you. It's an easy process to do, doesn't involve any big government or anything like that. You've already got the footage, you're just willing to share it, and you're letting us know where it is. We don't have to go door to door looking around. So it's very simple to do online. And what do they need to do exactly to register if they want to?
So it's important to note that we can't access your cameras, we can't access your live footage. All it is your contact information, where we know there is a camera at this resident, and it's your contact information, so we know who to call to let them know that it's an incident had happened and that we have a camera registration, and we would like to for you to cooperate in order for us to get that video. There's no live streaming or anything, so I don't want that misconception. But there's a link on that Facebook page where it is the registration. You just click that you're registering, you give your home address, your name information, your phone number, ways to contact, and that's it. It's just a marking on a map that says there is a camera here. And that's all that it is.
So if you know, look back through our Facebook page, you'll see the post. It was mid-September-ish. But if you're not seeing it readily, you know, give a call up, talk with Shanice. Call the main office, 599-1001, and we'll get you to the right source, and we'll get you the link so that you can register. We'd appreciate that. It takes all of us here in the community to make sure that we're doing everything we can to keep our community safe, stop thefts, stop violent crime, and your assistance with that is greatly appreciated.
And even with that, with the May 15th shooting, one of the big videos that were going around with the media was the Ring doorbell camera of that vehicle right. rolling down the street. So yeah. had we had that information, like, it would have just been easier to access. But those Ring footage, what they capture is important.
And in that case, though, we wound up getting a lot of Ring footage from around the area, but we had to go door to door canvassing it to see who had cameras and whether or not they would share that footage with us or whether or not they were able to capture anything. So you're registering online with us that you have a camera just makes it easier for our detectives, makes it faster for our response. So it's greatly appreciated. One of the other things that's happened over the last month, I think we actually talked about it a little bit maybe last time that we did a show, but the governor issued a public health order that related to the carrying of firearms, either concealed or open carry in Bernalillo County, Albuquerque and Bernalillo. And that was, controversial in the short term. She wound up revising the order. It was blocked by a judge. She wound up revising the order, making that same order, but only in playgrounds and parks down in the Albuquerque Bowl area. That was just within the last couple of days. That was just upheld by a federal judge. So that is now in effect. The reaction of the courts to it, the reaction of the Albuquerque officials to it, has been, you know, an ongoing topic. The Attorney General hosted a law enforcement summit, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and some of the positions that the Chief of Police Association and that FPD has taken on this topic.
So could you provide insight into the discussions and outcomes of the law enforcement summit with the New Mexico Attorney General's office? How do these discussions contribute to addressing the challenges of curbing gun-related crimes in the state?
So, you know, really this was just the first kind of gathering of law enforcement officials. It was police chiefs, sheriffs, and district attorneys from around the state. And I really give credit to the Attorney General, Raul Torres, put it together on pretty short notice. It is something that, has often left me less than happy that we don't involve law enforcement leadership, and yet we expect we're going to have solutions to problems that law enforcement is dealing with, even as we don't talk with law enforcement. So that has been a frustrating part of my 9 years here in New Mexico. It is not just a "it happened last week" thing. It has really been an ongoing thing that we divine solutions to problems that others actually are dealing with. And I always find that to be, you know, amazing. I rarely divine solutions to how doctors should operate better in the operating room, because I actually don't do that. You know, I actually would involve the doctors in that process. I rarely go in and wax philosophical on how teachers should do their job better, and then impose here's solutions that we're going to give to you when I don't know, and I wouldn't involve teachers. But we have pretty routinely done that with policing. So I was proud of the Attorney General. I thought it was a bold step. What you heard was a lot of different ideas and some new perspectives on what the challenges are. Challenges are a little different in every part of the state. The Albuquerque Bowl area has X challenge. We don't really see those in the same volume, certainly. They had kids getting shot. We have not had that experience. We had our mass shooter instead. And we have had gun crime. That has been a topic for us that can involve, you know, just firing off guns in city limits to actually using guns in the course of confrontations. So this was a chance for all of us to kind of get together in the same room and talk about ways that we can make ourselves more effective in responding to gun crimes, and I thought it was a good first step.
In light of the summit, what specific measures or strategies do you think are most effective in reducing gun-related crimes? How can law enforcement and state leadership work together to implement them?
You know, I think there's a variety of answers. There isn't just one answer that's going to turn the tide and fix everything magically. So I think that there is some discussion, and certainly that'll come, it looks like from the governor's office this upcoming session, on things like raising the age by which you can buy an AR-15. We saw that here in Farmington. You can buy an AR-15 when you turn 18, but you can't buy a handgun at 18. So I think there's some discussion about matching those up. And, you know, I think that probably isn't a bad thing. I wish that they would look again at the red flag law and clean that up some to allow us to utilize it more as an effective tool. I think there's differences in around the state in how judges in particular, but even as police chiefs, are seeing that law and seeing how we can use it or not use it. And so cleaning up the language, making it clearer, it makes that a more effective one. But I said it down at the summit several times, and I guess I'm still a little old school. Things start with accountability. So when we were really having a scrutiny on police, and there was pressure on chiefs aren't doing enough, you know, honestly, I was pushing back on that because the chiefs would make recommendations and send down an LEA 90, which is a form that requests from a chief, we want the state to licensing board to take a look at this officer and this conduct in this case, and we believe that they may not be eligible to be a police officer anymore in the state. And at that time, there was a backlog of over 130 officers that were sitting in that queue. Who had not lost their license yet, but who chiefs like me had identified as officers who perhaps should not be police officers anymore. And so at that time I was saying, if we're going to reform policing, it starts with accountability. Well, I believe the same thing is true with dealing with our public. If we are going to make meaningful impact on gun crime, you have to take the people who are committing the gun crimes and deal with them more harshly than we've been dealing with them. These are not petty crimes. You know, we got into criminal justice reform, and it was a lot of low-level drug offenders, and, you know, we were sold a certain product, some of which I agree with. But then we're turning around and we're releasing people that are arrested for homicides with no bail, and they're just released ROR. And then they're committing more crimes. And on top of that, we're sending a signal to people when you do commit a gun crime, you're going to be out in a couple of days anyway. It isn't that serious. So if we're going to go to the lengths of issuing a public health order that it's in a state of emergency here in New Mexico, then doggone it, it starts with the people who are already abusing the law. And they are raising their hands saying, you know, I can't follow the law, and I don't really care. And we as a society, that includes the state and that includes police chiefs, we should be putting those people in jail. We should be sending a hard message. You will not commit these crimes in New Mexico. We do not want you using guns against our citizens. We don't want you shooting citizens, pointing guns at them, committing robberies. And when we start sending that message, there's your first step. And then we can start building from there.
Are there any specific areas where you believe the state government could provide additional support or resources to law enforcement in addressing the challenges associated with gun-related crimes?
You know, really, I think that there's the starting spot. They're the ones that can affect the pretrial release, which is an issue. You know, I'm not saying scrap the entire thing. I'm saying we need to refine it. What do we want to see change in New Mexico? And if gun crimes are one, and honestly, I think that they should be, then that's an area we should be honing in on. That comes from the state government. But secondly, and, you know, I liked the Attorney General's summit. We ought to be doing more inclusive discussions of how are we doing and how are we going to do better. The governor just had another press conference in the wake of her amended order, which was upheld. But again, it did not involve chiefs, it did not involve sheriffs, it involved the state police who worked for the governor's office and a couple of the higher level cabinet officials. There was no discussions, there was no talking on how we're going to make improvements, there was just, we're going to send this out on the airwaves, and I always find that disappointing.
Do you want to talk about the KOB? I have it printed.
Sure.
Okay. So, the suspect in the killing of the 11-year-old boy released on an ankle monitor. So, Daniel Gomez was part of the killing of that 11-year-old boy and his aunt, who was injured outside of the Isotopes Parks. So he was actually released because the prosecutors believed that he played a bigger role than he did, which is kind of what you're talking about. This is what kind of spiraled all of this.
Yeah.
And that, he ended up being released.
That was the incident that, that touched off the whole governor's order, public health emergency. And here we've got one of the suspects, and he's out already. You know, the kid isn't, the kid's not back alive. We haven't sent a message to criminals across the state that when you commit crimes like shooting a child, you know, you are going to go to jail and we are going to prosecute you fully. Instead, you know, he's out on an ankle monitor. That makes it frustrating. And honestly, I watched the governor's interview on CNN, and there was a lot of calling out of law enforcement leadership. Where is law enforcement leadership on these things? And I'm shaking my head. The number of times I've testified on bills down in the legislature aimed at the police, like HB4, like the asset forfeiture laws, like some of the laws proposed by the ACLU and some of their supporters, aimed at police reform, is many. And the number of times I've been called to testify on, we're going to get tough on crime, we are going to focus in on this crime, we do not want to see this crime anymore, has been none. I have not been called to testify on those. So when there's the message that we're sending, it doesn't surprise me that one of the suspects has already been released in what has to be an extremely emotional case for Albuquerque. And it was emotional to the governor. We you know, called a public health emergency over it. But that's the level of seriousness that the criminal justice system's taking it. And that's just dysfunctional.
So we probably have time for one more question. How do you plan to balance your commitment to constitutional principles while the need to address rising violence? Are there compromises or middle ground that you see as viable?
You know, I don't think there's compromises on the Constitution. And, you know, we're going to enforce whatever laws are legally passed by the legislature, which we do with red flag laws. You know, some people were worked up about that this is infringing on the Constitution, but honestly, the courts have upheld it. The governor signed it. The legislature passed it. It's the job of the police to enforce laws like that. But we are not going out with broad new initiatives to skirt the law. We are going to do a good job investigating gun crimes, and that has been a focus of ours for the last couple of years. We are going to, you know, work with any agency that will help us, to include federal agencies, so that we can get folks into the federal system and out of our communities if they're committing gun crimes in Farmington. We do take those seriously, and we're going to do everything we can within the law to make sure that we're prosecuting people for it. But we are not in need of any sort of constitutional changes. I don't think there's any middle ground compromises on those. I think we have the tools. We just need to have the will to enforce those, and we need the courts and the state to back us up. So it was a busy month, September, and we're already now deep into October. We're racing up towards Halloween. And all the safety tips that you'll be seeing online, Scott, I imagine you'll share some too as it gets closer.
Sure.
Halloween's
right.
A big time, and I loved it when I was a kid. I even liked it when I was a dad, taking the kids around. But it is a time when you want to exercise a little extra caution. So watch for our Facebook pages. Shanice will give you some safety tips, and we'll be back here in just a couple of weeks.
Yep.
All of a sudden, November will be staring us in the face. I don't know really where the year's gone, but we're steamrolling towards the holidays. So for now, for today, we thank you for joining us and have a great day.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.